My name is Suchita Lorick. I'm a medical officer with CDC at the Immunization Services Division, and I'll be the moderator for the session. We've got two great presentations today, so we'll start out with the first one. This one's going to be presented by Ms. Luta Garbat-Welsh, and she's going to present on Kentucky college immunization policies. Luta has a master's in public and international health and development from Tulane. She's a lead epidemiologist for the Kentucky Immunization Program. And a little fun fact, she grew up in Malawi and has other international experience. So please help me welcome Luta to the stage, please. Please put your cell phones and pagers on mute. Thank you.
Good afternoon, everyone. As Suchita said, my name is Luta Garbat-Welch, and I'm an epidemiologist with the Kentucky Immunization Program. And today, I will be discussing the Kentucky College Immunization Policy Survey that we conducted in 2007 and 2008. Colleges are optimal environments for the spread of vaccine-preventable disease for multiple reasons. Students live in close proximity to each other. They have varying immunization histories. They have a, students are very, what's the word I'm looking for? They're highly mobile. They travel during spring break, Christmas break. They do travel abroad programs. And they also share grooming supplies, such as razors and toothbrushes. Couple of college age outbreaks that have occurred in our more recent past. There was a multi-state outbreak of mumps in 2008, where the incidence was highest among individuals aged 18 to 24. There was also a pertussis outbreak in 2006 at Vanderbilt University, and half of the students at Vanderbilt almost half missed classes due to their cough. An outbreak of measles at a university in Washington back in 1995 cost the university $300,000 to control, so that kind of gives you an idea of the financial aspect of vaccine-preventable disease on campus. Studies show immunization requirements improve immunization coverage, thus serve to minimize vaccine-preventable disease, and there are actually a couple of specific studies that show that colleges that have measles requirements are less likely to have measles outbreaks, and a more recent study showed that individuals vaccinated for influenza were less likely to do poorly on their exams and their assignments. I have these, if you're interested in this research, they're listed as citations at the end of the presentation. Historically, immunization programs have focused on childhood immunizations, and often the general public is unaware of the need for adult immunizations. So the Kentucky Immunization Program decided that one of the first things we wanted to do in working with adult populations was to try and work with our colleges. And for the purposes of this presentation, when I say college, I'm referring to all institutions of higher education. So your public four-year colleges, your private four-year colleges, community technical schools, Bible colleges, seminaries, the whole lot. Kentucky has two pieces of legislation that relate to college immunizations. Both of these pieces do not mandate college requirements. So our first one, KRS 164-282, requires the provision of hepatitis B information and the American College Health Association recommendations regarding hepatitis B vaccine. And then KRS 164-2867 requires a provision of information regarding the meningococcal vaccine. So the purpose of the College Immunization Policy Survey was to determine whether colleges in Kentucky had immunization policies that either require students to have immunizations or provided immunization recommendations to the students. And we were hoping that through this survey, we could identify whether or not we should begin working with colleges, whether there was a need for that work in Kentucky. We, our adult and adolescent immunization coordinator, created a self-administered survey. It was both a paper-based survey and an online survey using SurveyMonkey. And the survey covered questions regarding who was covered by immunization policies, which vaccines were covered by policies, whether or not there were sanctions in place for individuals who were not in compliance with those requirements, policies for vaccine-preventable disease outbreaks, and then advertisement of immunization availability on campus. We also had some other questions as well, which I'm not going to cover today. The survey was distributed by mail and email to 50 colleges that were listed on the Go Higher Kentucky and Kentucky Council for Postsecondary Education websites. Survey was mailed out 3 times to those colleges who had not yet submitted a completed survey. And then, as an incentive, upon completion of the survey, each college received a copy of the Epidemiology and Prevention of Vaccine Preventable Disease 10th edition. Just to look at our overall results, we had an 80% response rate, so 40 of the colleges responded. 58% of the colleges that responded require at least one immunization for all or a select population of students. 71% of the colleges with residential students follow Kentucky legislation regarding the provision of meningococcal information. And then 12% of the colleges follow Kentucky legislation requiring the provision of hepatitis B information. So 70% of the colleges who responded, so that's 28 colleges, had some type of immunization policy. And we considered an immunization policy to be either a requirement or a recommendation. And what we did is we split the policies up into 6 categories. 28% of the colleges required immunizations for admittance. 25% required immunizations for health sciences students. 12% required immunizations for residential students. And then one college, which is 3%, required immunizations for other, and that was actually veterinary students and then students who were participating in teaching practicums. 43% provided recommendations to all of their students, and then 32% provided recommendations to their residential students. This is a graph that kind of shows you the characteristics of those colleges who had immunization policies. So we looked at private 4-year colleges, public 4-year. The CTCCC is the Community Technical College and Community College. Whether or not they had a health clinic on campus, whether or not they had students in housing, and then the number of enrolled students at the college. And then our y-axis is our percentage of colleges. So as you can see, 100% of our public 4-year colleges had some sort of immunization policy, and our most of the colleges that had a health clinic and most of the colleges who had students in housing also had some type of policy. And then of note, of course, is our community colleges generally did not have a policy. Looking at the immunizations that were covered by those colleges who had an immunization requirement, so we looked at immunization requirements for all students, students in housing, health sciences students, and other students. You can see that measles, mumps, rubella is the most commonly required immunization. 48% of the colleges require measles, mumps, rubella for all students. This is actually 100% of the colleges who require immunizations for all students. So we only had 11 colleges who require immunizations for all students, and all 11 of them required measles, mumps, rubella. 22% of the colleges require measles, mumps, rubella for students in housing. 17% require measles, mumps, rubella for health sciences students. And then the college that required immunizations for veterinary and teaching students required measles, mumps, rubella. Tetanus, diphtheria, and or pertussis, polio, and hepatitis B were the next most commonly required immunizations, and hepatitis B was the most commonly required immunization for health sciences students. looking at immunizations that are covered by immunization recommendations. Again, we looked at recommendations for all students and then recommendations for students in housing. And we had 20 colleges who had immunization recommendations. So you can see meningococcal is the most commonly recommended immunization. All of the schools who provided recommendations for all students recommended meningococcal, and then a significant amount required it for students, recommended it for students in housing. Hepatitis B is the next most commonly recommended immunization. And the other immunizations for all students, it was a couple of colleges recommended those immunizations. And varicella was the only other immunization recommended for students in housing. So when we looked at the colleges who had sanctions for students who were not in compliance with immunization requirements, 70% of the colleges who required immunizations for health sciences students had sanctions in place, and they indicated that these students could not begin their clinicals if they were not in compliance, which was the same for the college who required immunizations for veterinary and teaching students. 55% of our colleges who require immunizations for all students had sanctions in place. But what was interesting is three of those colleges indicated on the survey that although there was a sanction on paper, it had never been enforced. So is that a sanction? I don't know. Looking at vaccine-preventable disease notification, 75% of the colleges notify students if there's a vaccine-preventable disease, and 62% of this notification occurs through email. 28% of the colleges know the number of students with exemptions. 15% have a policy for locating exempt students in case of a vaccine-preventable disease, and then 3% have a policy for locating exempt faculty and staff. So you can see by these numbers that if there is a vaccine-preventable disease outbreak on campus, it's going to be hard to identify those students who are particularly susceptible. We also looked at how colleges advertised that they had immunizations on campus, and 81% of the colleges that offer immunizations advertise the availability of immunizations through their campus website, their health center website, or freshman orientation, and 56% of the colleges advertise through health clinic pamphlets and pre-admission paperwork. And although most of the colleges advertised through two or more avenues, you can still see that students could slip through the crack. If a college only advertised during freshman orientation and on the health center website, lots of students are not going to remember what they hear during freshman orientation, and if they don't visit the health center website, they won't know that's available to them. 75% of the colleges advertise availability of flu vaccine on campus, and this is looking at all colleges if they have a flu clinic, even without a health clinic present, and they advertised it through a multiple variety campus website, flyers, posters, email. We also asked the colleges how often they review their immunization policies, and we found that 53% review the policies biannually or annually. One college stated that they review their policy every 3 years, and then 23% stated that they did not review their policy. Also of note is that 23% of those who responded to our survey did not respond to this question. So we decided to take our results and compare them to the American College Health Association requirement recommendations. And we decided just to look at some of the more routine vaccines: diphtheria, tetanus, pertussis, measles, mumps, rubella, varicella, hepatitis B, and meningococcal. So we didn't take into account influenza, we didn't take into account HPV. And we found that 8% of our colleges have implemented ACHA recommendations for all students, and 5% have implemented ACHA recommendations for health sciences students, which means that 87% of our colleges have not implemented these recommendations. So I kind of started to look closer at it and found that our colleges that require immunizations require measles, mumps, rubella, tetanus, diphtheria, and polio. And when you go through the history of American College Health Association recommendations, these were recommendations that were provided in 1983. So we're a little behind the times. Just to kind of summarize where we as a program thought that there was need based on our survey, obviously there's need for stronger immunization policies, both recommendations and requirements. Improvements are also needed with immunization advertisement, as well as provision of education regarding immunizations. Knowledge of colleges regarding who's exempt on campus, students as well as faculty and staff. Sanctions for students who are out of compliance, as well as systems to monitor compliance. And I didn't discuss this in our results, but we also asked questions about immunization requirements for international students and travel abroad programs, and we basically found the same thing, that as with the rest of the population, the requirements just weren't strong enough. So what we as a program did is we decided to create what we call a gold standard policy and a minimal immunization policy, and we were trying to take into account that colleges are going to have different limitations. A private four-year college is going to have different resources available to them than a community technical college, different population of students. So our gold standard policy is kind of, this is what you really need to be doing to be fully protecting the health of your students. And the minimal policy is, this is the bare minimum that you need to do. And that was also in hopes to not overwhelm our colleges who have nothing in place at this point in time. We also recommend the use of systems to monitor compliance, the enforcement of sanctions. We recommend that colleges have policies in place to use in case of a vaccine preventable disease outbreak. And then the use of multiple venues for providing immunization education as well as advertising that immunizations are available on campus. So our results did indicate to our program that yes, colleges are an avenue that we need to start working with in our adult populations. And one of the first things that we are working on is creating a college immunization toolkit. And we have, I've listed some of the things that we're including in our toolkit: educational materials, suggestions for education, and that includes trying to be a little more creative about how you provide education. So using things like Facebook, because college students are on Facebook all the time. Ideas for collaborating with other organizations to provide education, as well as to provide immunization clinics. So not just flu clinics, but if you don't have a health center on campus, how could you bring immunizations to the students? Model immunization requirements and recommendations, sample immunization records, systems to use to monitor compliance and enforce sanctions, and then a little bit about vaccine management as well. In addition, we wanted to address the colleges more than in just one direction. So we decided, well, one of the things that we plan to work on is to start encouraging legislation that requires immunizations for college students. Last time I looked, which was a year ago, there were 37 states that require immunizations for college students, and we are not one of those states. And in addition, we are working to establish relationships with colleges so that we can be a resource to the colleges and we can be known as a resource, as well as be a partner with the colleges so we can help them protect the health of their students. In conclusion, I'd like to acknowledge the other authors of this survey and the report: Alicia Tyndall, our adult and adolescent coordinator, Dave Miller, our program manager, and Dr. Robert Brawley, our infectious disease branch manager.
Okay, anybody have questions? She presented a lot of interesting information. All right. We have one coming up. Would you mind coming up to the mic? Because I think it's being recorded. Thank you. Dr. Strickus.
Ray Strickus, National Vaccine Program Office. You presented a lot of data, and you're commended to have done a very comprehensive survey and a comprehensive report. I think I heard you say at the beginning, and I saw on the slide, that you do have in Kentucky two requirements, one for notifying people about meningococcal disease, and was the other one for MMR, I think?
Hepatitis B,
excuse me. So you actually do have two state laws, yet many of the colleges, most perhaps, were not following even those. And so in your long list of next steps, which again is an excellent list, I'm not sure that it was exactly addressed. Did you tell the colleges when you got done, hey, you all aren't following our existing state laws, and I think that's a place to start.
Yeah, and actually we are in the, one of CDC's requirements is to evaluate part of your program, and we're evaluating this toolkit. And so we've had lots of phone calls with the colleges and have found that most of them just don't even know that there is a requirement. So we are putting that information out as well.
Great, thank you.
Thank you for your presentation. My name is Gene Robert Jeffro. I'm from the Arizona Immunization Program. I'd like to know what kind of step or sanction would you take to the student that not following through?
We looked at what some of the other colleges in different states have been doing, and what most colleges do is if a student hasn't met with their immunization requirements, they're not allowed to register for the following semester. So there's a hold placed on their registration. So they're given a semester to be able to, if they're missing a series, they're at least given that chance to start that series. And that tends to be what we found most other colleges have done.
So you would need the legislators to be behind you to do that, don't you?
No, because most of these colleges have, that's just a part of their college policy, that if you don't meet our requirements for entering college, then we won't let you register for the next semester.
Great, thank you. Any other questions? I was gonna ask you, are you aware of any other states who've done similar surveys? I was pretty incredulous at the low rates, and especially not, you know, compliant with the ACHA requirements or recommendations.
Washington State did a study, and I think it was soon after their measles outbreak, and they found, if I remember correctly, they found similar things to what we found.
Okay. One more question.
Hi, Kelly Moore with Tennessee. We're in the process of actually, we've just filed new regulations for school entry, including new regulations affecting colleges in Tennessee. So I was interested to hear what Kentucky was doing since we share a long border. couple of questions for you. In Tennessee, we do already require MMR two doses, but we don't have any state requirements for anything else. We're adding a two-dose varicella or history of disease requirement in college for college entry for full-time students. And we also are, we're clarifying a regulation that I wanted to know if you ran into this issue that was brought to us by our Tennessee Board of Regents. They have lots of full-time students who are distance learners who may work on the internet who never set foot in the state or on the campus. And because our old rules required MMR two doses for all full-time students, they were having to file, you know, because they were being vigilant about actually adhering to the rules, they were having to give immunization evidence even though they weren't in the state. And so we cleared that up and specifically excluded full-time distance learning students from our regulations. But did you encounter any sort of issues around distance learning? Because that was just something that has come into play since those regs were written many years ago.
Well, two things. One, when we were doing the survey, we do have one of our colleges, the Frontier Midwifery School, actually mainly does a lot of distance learning, so the nurses come in for like a week. So a lot of their results on the survey were just kind of screwy because they didn't have those requirements because most of the people were distant, so it was different. Regarding whether or not we've addressed any of this stuff in legislation, we haven't even, this, like, looking at legislation is something that's a long-term plan. We haven't even started opening that up, so I have no idea if we'll I mean, that's something that we now need to consider when we do actually start doing that work.
Thanks. Yeah, every state's different. In Tennessee, we can open it up through regulation, not legislation. So we have access to those without having to go through the legislature, thank goodness. So thanks.
Thank you. Any other questions?
I did some work on this same topic last year where I looked at state-level requirements, either legislation or regulatory requirements for PIRs. And the paper that you cite here from 1993 by Cook and Associates, they said that the strongest determinant of a PIR at the institutional level was a state law or a region's policy. And I found that many states since that time have not taken steps to enact additional PIRs, and therefore colleges and universities haven't gone anywhere with it. And the ACHA has never reemphasized, I think, their 1987 suggestion that states enact legislation calling for PIRs. Where is this going? Why do you think they haven't, you know, reiterated the need to have state laws so that colleges and universities then have policies that require this?
I honestly don't know. I know for Kentucky, what I found was interesting was a lot of our colleges didn't even know that ACHA had recommendations. It was just like, really? They recommend immunizations? Well, can you send me those recommendations? So, and I would say, just based on telephone calls, over 50% of our colleges didn't know that ACHA recommended immunization requirements. So I don't know if that plays into it. I'm assuming it does.
Okay, thanks.
All right, thank you. All right, thank you very much.